Today, we have two very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine-free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Oh, I like it.
So you saying hip-hop could be hop-hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Rob McDermott and Kieran Cunningham with us for the week trending. And okay, it hasn't come up in trending during this week yet, but it probably will over the weekend when the time changes. Daylight saving. You've just explained to me a little way you remember when the hour goes forward, goes back, Kieran, is?
Fall back, spring forward, and fall in the American sense.
Okay. So the clock goes back an hour on yeah. Saturday night.
Yeah.
Okay. Why is there a campaign against that?
Why is there a campaign? Well, it comes up every year, and I think it's because I do find, I find it myself, a lot of people, their mood is affected by the change of the seasons, and particularly getting dark earlier, they find that adjustment difficult. And the reasoning behind it is a lot of people think, why are we giving up that extra day of daylight?
Extra hour of daylight.
Yeah. You know, what is the point of this? And the flip side is it would mean around the middle of December that you would have sunrise wouldn't be till about 9:30 in the morning if you didn't change. So it depends what you want to do. You place more value in having a bit more daylight in the evening or in the morning. It would mean most people going to work at school would be doing so in the dark, which a lot of people do at the moment anyway. So
yeah, I've been purely selfish. I like my afternoon golf, so that gives me less time to get finished before it turns dark. What do you think, Ro? Is this an issue for people? Does it affect their mood? Or is there a good reason to say that actually, okay, a lot of people do go to work in the morning in the dark, but do we want the school children going in the dark as well, that it's still been dark when they're going into the classrooms?
Yeah, I think this study has come out from the British Sleep Society, and they were saying that actually it's circadian rhythm. So you have your physical, your mental, your emotional, your behavioural changes that you experience over 24 hours. They're actually most impacted by the clocks moving forward in spring. And if we think we're actually really lucky in Ireland and the UK because we get incredibly long days in the summer. I was saying that there were American tourists over during the summer and they were kind of wandering around at 9:30 going, oh my God, it's still light during the summer. This is amazing. So I think we can get away with having slightly shorter days during the summer. And if overall it impacts people's circadian rhythms and their mental health better, I think that would be of huge benefit because I know so many people, myself included, who are affected by seasonal affective disorder. And that is really to do with circadian rhythms and it has a huge amount to do with light. So I think they're looking at it not just, yeah, we might have dark mornings during the winter, but over the course of a year, people will see the benefits emotionally and mentally and in their sleep patterns. And they were saying that this is GMT aligns closely with the natural light cycles, light-dark cycles of day and night. And natural daylight in the morning is crucial for maintaining an optimal alignment of our body clocks with day and night, which is essential for optimal sleep and overall health. So they're looking at it throughout the year rather than just during the winter. So I think it's worth trying. Also, it's such a faff, isn't it? I always forget to change one clock and then I'm deeply confused. Yeah. So
you still have clocks that you need to change. Most people just work off their phone
clock,
now, which changes automatically.
I still have a clock on the wall as well, just for decorative reasons, but just still wanted the right to.
Okay,
Ireland used to have its own time zone. Did you know that?
Yes.
Dublin Mean Time. It was changed after the 1916 rising. But apparently, I was reading about this earlier, there was a...
Is Irish time just where we're an hour late to everything?
No, it was 25 minutes and 21 seconds different to Greenwich Mean Time. Very exact. But there was a farmer, a well-off farmer in Donegal called Alexander Bryce, and that a historian was doing research in Dublin meantime and found that way after partition and way after the War of Independence, he was still refused to change. He was still operating on Dublin meantime, which often caused problems with people who were trying to do business with him.
Okay, a lot of listeners have comments on this one. I put them down. The kids walking to the school in the dark is nonsense. Keep summertime. Stop this campaign for keeping winter time. Another one says changing the time also causes a lot of animals being killed on the road because they have their own times to avoid our busy times. And as another one says, the clocks changing can trigger anxiety and upset the stomach in pets. How the hell would that be? How would the dogs even know how the time is changed?
But if it's changing their dinner time because of people, because adults would feed their pets, like they go, oh, it's 6 o'clock, I'll feed the dog. And so suddenly it's changing their time. So maybe that's
true. And for one day, like they're used to one day, it gets dark at, you know, in terms of their body clock, and the following day there's an hour's difference. They might know, they would notice that, I think, in animals.
Clodagh says, I'd rather go to work and school in daylight. I lived in Sweden and it was dark until 9:30 a.m. and it was awful. I also remember being in primary school in the 70s when the clocks didn't change. Going to school in the dark was scary. If the clocks must remain, I prefer to stay in winter time. Then we have the morning light. Another one says, it's the clock in the oven that you need to change, and you need a degree in astrophysics to do that. I agree entirely. That is absolutely true. They want to change it so you're pretty much working the extra hour and not sleeping. Like everything, capitalism grief is rife.
Well, this is really important because Jenny O'Dell is an incredible writer and she's written a huge amount about time. So she wrote a book about saving time, and it is all about how people used to wake with light and they used to work seasonally. And it's about how the institution of kind of a regimented time is all to do with capitalism. It is all to do with we have to regiment workers, we have to have a 9-hour working day. And I mean, none of it makes sense. If you think of the amount of shops now that close at 6 or the amount of doctor's offices that close at 5 and you can't get an appointment because people are working. So I think being more flexible about time and maybe going back to some of this and taking account of light and doing what is better for our mental health rather than what is better for capitalism, I'm all for it.
Another one says, for goodness sake, not this change the clocks gurning again. Who cares? Do they have all this gurning in Portugal, which is on the same time zone as us? Are you forgetting about the thousands of us who work outdoors? What am I to do from 8 o'clock until 9:30 in the morning if it's still dark? Turn on the light in the house I haven't built yet.
Don't work. See, rebel against capitalism. That's what we're doing.
Okay, another one says, big potential spanner in the works, not rechanging the clocks, is the UK. If they don't agree to outside any EU agreement, we'd be in different time zones, says Grace in Dublin. And another one says, the island is isolated, being an island of mainland Europe as a result, totally dependent on aviation to keep the economy ticking over. We're not a country in mainland Europe where we can get a train here, there and everywhere. I'm not sure how that's relevant to this one.
Anyway. I like the idea of the UK being behind the times in every single way, though. I just think it's a metaphor that's kind of great.
Listener from Panama, who says, right. Hola, we don't have daylight saving in Panama. We're almost 12 hours, 12 light and dark. There's about a half an hour in the difference between the longest day and the shortest day.
Really?
Okay. Oh. Anyway, and another listener says, 100% to you, thank you, mental health is more important. And then this listener says, you've now taken wokeism to a whole new level.
We're coming for your clocks. Yeah,
please,
that is the woke agenda.
I've added to my long list of what woke means.
Okay. I know.
Or maybe it's because we brought up the dogs and we're woke on behalf of the dogs. My dogs are both upset for weeks when the clocks change. They have their own internal clocks and know when to expect us home from work to.
But I think the idea of, I know I do really understand the concern about walking kids to school in the dark, but if you think of it, they're getting what, like 15 minutes in the morning when they're outside and then they're in a building all day. Wouldn't it be better for them to have an hour more sunlight when they are out of a building and able to enjoy it and able to get outside maybe? And I think that's a huge problem for parents during the winter, is that kids don't have any daylight to go outside and play, and that's a huge issue.
Well, if we're talking about the pets, here's a more important one. Try working in a dementia unit with the times changing. It really affects those people's routine. And another one, should the kids are driven to school, they don't walk. Not true in all cases. Yeah. Not true. Okay, let's talk about other things. Let's hear a little bit of the woman in the Australian Parliament, Lydia Thorpe. Well, why she heckled Britain's King Charles when he was on a visit there.
I wanted to send a clear message to the King of England that he's not the king of this country. He's not my king. He's not sovereign. We are sovereign. To be sovereign, you have to be of the land. He's not of this land. We have been demanding a treaty for decades and decades. There is a sophisticated genocide going on against my people. We have almost 24,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander children that have been taken from their families. We have over 600 deaths in custody with not one officer ever being held accountable or responsible.
Is King Charles responsible for that?
His ancestors certainly are, because his direct ancestors include King Edward VII and King George V. And it was their Australian representative, the Governor-General, who signed off on a policy such as the Northern Territory Aboriginals Act that gave the government power to remove First Nations children from their families. And the Aborigines Protection Act in 1909 in New South Wales was enacted by, quote-unquote, the King's Most Excellent Majesty, and the 1915 amendment, which gave the government power to remove any child at any time for any reason. And the legacy of this continues, and the legacy of the violence of colonisation against First Nation peoples continues. And I think Lydia Thorpe is brilliant and has been speaking about this a lot. And I think the furore surrounding her protest has focused on this idea of, well, it's not on King Charles. And that, to a certain extent, is true. The king does not have power to enact treaties anymore. However, he has never issued a formal apology for the work of his ancestors. He has never fully apologised for the impact of colonisation and addressed it. And were he to, it would have a huge impact on these conversations. And I think the criticism of Lydia Thorpe is focused on, well, that's not the time and place, and it's not, this isn't how we conduct kind of civil discourse. And the problem is that Lydia Thorpe has written to King Charles many, many times on this issue and has said he refused to respond. And I think the idea of civil discourse and civil conversation is, we need to really dissect that, because when we're talking about colonization, the idea of civility is layered into it. Like, we are going to be a civilizing influence on these people who are not civilized. And it's a form of tone policing, saying this isn't the way to have the conversation, is saying the way you're trying to have the conversation is the problem. And it's actually a form of deflecting and saying, I don't want to have this conversation. So she tried to have the conversation in the correct, quote unquote, correct way. It wasn't happening. She's highlighting really important issues, like people have died, people are continuing to die in care, children have been disappeared, which I think Irish people should have a huge amount of empathy for, and it's not been addressed. I applaud her.
And something else, Kieran, that strikes me out of all this is not just the Aborigine people who would have the issues, the native Australians, as to what settlers did, but Australia now has become a country of an extraordinary number of other immigrants. And I can't imagine that all of the people who have come in from Asia or from Europe or the Middle East to now make up such an enormous amount of the Australian population, or indeed Ireland, why would they still want to have the British monarch as their country's king?
No, and you know, the Union Jack is still part of the flag. Like, it's embedded in the Australia flag, which, you know, I've only been to Australia once, and that it is something that comes up there. I remember it being discussed at the time around the Sydney Olympics, around the symbolism of that. But I think this is there are things about Britain's past and a lot of the former colonial powers' past that are going to come up more and more. And, you know, that at the meeting of Commonwealth leaders, King Charles was asked to directly, he sidestepped calls to directly address the question of reparations for slavery. But I think those kind of questions will come up increasingly in the future. And also all the treasures that were plundered. Like, if you go to any of the great museums in London or the great art galleries, or look at the jewels that the king drapes himself in, where did they come from? They were plundered from colonies. You know, they were plundered with a lot of bloodshed.
Can I just say, on that point, this week the film Dahomey is being released, and it's not about Australia, it's about artefacts that were taken and stolen from African nations and brought to France, and the fact that they were returned. And it's a really incredible experimental documentary that's out today, but it really explores that idea of what happens to a nation when not only is its art and its history colonised, but erased and whitewashed, and how modern day people still grapple with that, grapple with their history being erased, grapple with what it means for their identity. So I think these issues are coming up worldwide, and the fact that King Charles is trying to sidestep them, I mean, it's just not good enough anymore. And Keir Starmer came out in support of King Charles, which I just thought was incredibly cowardly, really, and just saying maybe we do need to address these issues full on. And yes, even if they want to criticise the form of protest, saying obviously these conversations are of huge importance to people and let's designate a time to talk to them, instead of saying, well, that was very rude of her, let's never talk about it again.
What do you make of the survey that has nominated Dublin as the second most expensive place in Europe to live?
not surprised at all. But this is talking about people living and working remotely. So it's really looking at digital nomads and where they go in Europe. And we're saying that we're second only to London. And they looked at the average cost of renting apartment, a one-bedroom apartment, which at the moment in Dublin is €1,862 is the average for a one-bedroom apartment, which is the most depressing thing I've ever read in my life. And they looked, but they were also looking at kind of food costs, average costs of living. But I just find it really tricky because I was actually speaking to someone during the week who has lived the digital nomad life and was over in Lisbon. I was saying they were living in Dublin, had been evicted about six times over the course of 2 years, and how depressing that is and how difficult it is to feel safe in your hometown when you're constantly living under this kind of rental crisis and housing crisis. So moved to Lisbon, was living there for about 2.5 years and said like the sense of safety of being able to stay there. However, Lisbon is also going through its own rental crisis because for every Lisbon native, there are 12 tourists.
And there are certain, I know there are also the Irish people like your friend who decided to go and work there from Lisbon.
But she's, and so they were grappling with that and saying, you know, we're really experiencing a bit of hostility essentially. But they were saying, we understand because we're experiencing that in Dublin. So they're actually moving back now. How they'll afford to live here, they don't know, but they don't want to contribute to this in another city.
Kieran, I've actually put it to a number of ministers on this programme previously, particularly Pascal Donoghue and also Norma Foley as Minister for Education. Have we reached a stage whereby, particularly for essential public services like teachers and nurses and Gardaí, that they're going to have to be paid a supplement to be able to afford to live in Dublin? Because if you're a teacher in Dublin, well, it's very hard to make ends meet, whereas if you're a teacher living in, say, Kerry or Mayo, you might have a much higher standard of living.
Yeah, well, I think there's an argument for that to be made for a lot of jobs. And, you know, I've always thought there's a huge irony in as well that, like, Dublin makes great play of being a cultural city. And when it was European Capital of Culture, and it's got a statue of James Joyce and the statue of Oscar Wilde and the poster of writers that were in the pubs, etc., the statues of Luke Kelly and Phil Lynott. And the reality is now that writers and musicians and artists generally don't live in Dublin because they can't afford to. Like I sometimes, you know, you'd look online and people that I would dealt with years ago, say in music or there were an NCAD or artists, whatever, and they're all living in Leitrim, Sligo, Mayo, Clare. None of them can live in Dublin. And that's a big problem for a city. Like who is the city for now?
Yeah.
You know, because where are you going to be in 10, 20 years? Like who are going to be the dubs? Because very, very few people will be able to afford in such an incredibly expensive city.
And if you're trying to, even if you are trying to get digital nomads to come to Dublin or if you're trying to get tourists to come here, we have to have something to offer them. And if nobody has any money, if people are trying to survive, it means there's no room to fail and to experiment. And that's where great art and culture comes from. I remember right after the Celtic Tiger, there were so many weird and wonderful quirky art events and storytelling nights, and they could set up and try something new because they could afford to. When people are struggling to make ends meet and meet their basic needs, you can't do that. So what are we offering people?
Moving on, JP McManus's international rugby experience in Limerick is to close after just 1 year of been open, Kieran. Why?
Let me just...
Could it be that it's simply just not making enough money?
Well, I would presume, you know, that does seem to be the case. Like, it's unusual that anything with JP has been involved in hasn't been a success because he does seem to have the Midas touch. And so many people in Irish sport, you know, particularly the GAA, like that incredible gesture when he gave millions to every club in the country to be shared among every club in the country. But this was set up with a gift of €30 million from the JP McManus Foundation. It was opened in May of last year. They were hoping for 100,000 visitors, but it didn't even per year, but it didn't even reach 60,000. And it's been confirmed now in a statement that it's going to close on 23rd of December. All bookings up to then will be honoured, but
there was an offer to hand it over to the local council, which apparently didn't seem to want to take on the future running costs of this. But isn't there a problem here in that, you know, again, if we come back to, you know, there's been a big report on regeneration of Dublin city centre this week. I would argue Cork needs something similar, actually. Mm-hmm. Done a piece for the Business Post for Sunday on that. And Limerick also needs that. And it's a real problem that if you do try and put things like this in, yeah, and then they end up closing, what hope is there for redeveloping our city centres?
Well, in fairness, I think it shows that when you invest, there is a story this week that shows if you invest in places, they do well, because in the National Geographic, Cork was listed as one of the best places to visit.
Yeah, but you know, they got stuff wrong. They talked about expanding the event centre. The event centre hasn't even been built. You know, they talked about expanding something that doesn't even exist.
But they did also talk about Cork's connections to Killian Murphy. And as we know, Killian Murphy is a treasured landscape of natural beauty. So that's maybe what they're talking about. But they are advertising Cork and saying the improvements that are to be completed, hopefully, by 2028, such as refurbishing the Crawford Art Gallery and redeveloping the ports and the Docklands, and saying, yes, the event centre, should it get up and running, will host new concerts and festivals and exhibitions. But there's a sense of excitement there and a sense of hope for a city that comes from investing in it. I'm not going to lie, I had not heard of the Limerick Rugby Centre until today, so I'm not devastated it's closing. But that's a huge amount of money to be pouring into sports, and I understand sports are incredibly important, but could we...
You're saying that through gritted teeth, Ro, aren't you? You don't sound convincing on that.
My woke agenda, I want less time, less sports, and rights for dogs.
The last word on sport will be between 6 and 7, Ro, the full hour. Very briefly, the criminal who goes by the name of Tommy Robinson.
Tommy, two names.
Tommy, yeah, because Stephen Yaxley Lennon, which is his real name, which he doesn't use because that's when he had previous convictions. I believe he's now in custody in the UK as of today.
Yeah, he's been remanded in custody. He handed himself in at a police station in Kent. He's been charged with one count of failing to provide the PIN to his mobile phone under Schedule 7 of the Terrorism Act 2000. You know, he's been to the fore in a lot of kind of stoking up hatred and
he's tried to do it in Ireland. He's tried to stick his oar in Ireland on a number of occasions.
And there's a lot of people. No, there are a lot of figures in Irish on the Irish right that are very connected to Tommy Robinson. Some of them were elected in the local elections as well, but. I'd be a little bit fearful that they'll turn him into a martyr now. Mm. That this will be, you know, they say like Tom, that he will be a lightning rod for to get even more support. And it's just part of an ugliness that's all over Europe. And maybe people have this on their woke list, but I think it's pretty ugly.
I think the irony and just the lack of logic that seems to be pervasive through far right circles is so obvious here. Like, he had to change his name because he was dodging his criminal record. He has 4 prison terms behind him already. He was found guilty and successfully sued by a Syrian refugee for spreading libelous claims about him that resulted in a teenage boy getting assaulted. And then he repeated those claims. He's aired a film called Silenced at Trafalgar Square. Just the irony of that. I mean, him and Dave Chappelle should take their like show on the road with their "I'm so silenced, look at my Netflix
special." Don't
give
them an idea, because they'd end up making paid lots of money. And he has been a bit of a grifter in that regard.
But he's
as well.
Also harassed
they
female journalists.
A lot of these ultimately are grifters.
He's harassed female journalists. He set an online mob on a rape crisis centre before. Like, he just spreads all of this horrible rhetoric about immigrants while, by the way, spending half of his time in Spain trying to dodge charges, and talks about wanting to keep like UK women safe.
Okay.
Never turns up for anything that affects UK women, but just uses this racist rhetoric. So I hope he stays in jail for a long time.
Ro McDermott and Kieran Cunningham, thank you very much. A listener says the rugby experience in Limerick was a great idea, but the problem with Limerick City Centre is that there's nothing except BTs and pennies to bring people in. All the shopping is on the outskirts where there's the free parking.
The last word on Today FM.
Today we have 2 very special guests on our program, introducing Lem and Lime.
Hello.
For Starry Lemon Lime Soda.
Thanks for having us.
What is Starry Lemon Lime Soda?
It's a crisp, clear burst of lemon lime flavor, and it's caffeine free.
Between us, one of you must be a little more important to Starry than the other. Who is it?
We're both important.
So we could just as easily be Starry Lime Lemon Soda.
No, that doesn't sound right.
Ooh, I like it.
So you saying hip hop could be hop hip?
Works for me.
Starry Lemon Lime Soda. Starry hits different.